First John chapter 2 is where we're going to start. We're just going to look at the very last verse of the chapter and then head into chapter 3 and talk about being born of God. First John chapter 2, starting at verse 29. So in the passage that we looked at last week from First John, John's been talking very strongly about antichrists, people who are working against the kingdom and the cause of Jesus. And they're out in the world, and they've actually just had a church split, the Christians that he's writing to here. But the antichrists are still in the area, and they're seeing them, and they're actually interacting with them. And it's tough because there's this constant temptation to be deceived. And so if you're one of these Christians who's just gone through this church split, and you're trying to figure out, okay, what is the truth about Jesus? Who is right? Because they sure feel strongly about what they teach and believe. And I'm trying to figure out my life and how I fit into this great plan, because maybe it's not what I thought it was to begin with. If you're kind of in these moments of doubt, what do you need to hear from God that the Apostle John writes down? Well, what you need to hear is, here's what God thinks about you. You are a person who is born of God. And if you are born of God, that's how you have assurance that you're part of this spiritual Israel that we're talking about this morning. You know, it's really interesting that if you want to travel to a foreign country, what do you need? You need special documents that prove your identity, right? You need a passport, you need a visa, you need something like that to get you from our country to a different country. But if you want to enter the borders of God's special kingdom, then you're not going to need special documents to prove your identity. You're going to have to undergo a complete transformation that actually changes your identity into something else. You remember in John chapter 3, where this guy named Nicodemus, this Pharisee, this important bigwig in the Pharisee culture, he comes by night to Jesus and he has a conversation with him, and he says, "Wow, Jesus, you sure look really special because you're doing all this stuff and nobody can do that unless God's with them." And Jesus, right off the bat, instead of saying, "Oh, thank you, Nicodemus, that's so sweet," he said, "Look, I want to tell you about the kingdom." He says, "Look, unless you are born again, you cannot see, you cannot enter my kingdom that I'm setting up." And Nicodemus is really confused about that, but this is the same thing that the Apostle John is writing about in this letter. We've got to be born again, born of God. But this question that I think we can ask after that is, well, okay, but how do you know whether you or somebody else really is this, has this status of being born again? And what John is going to say in this passage that we're studying this morning is that if we're showing in our lives an appreciation for the kind of love that God shows to us, then we know that we've got this. Then we know that we are actually children of this Father. So let's identify three big ideas in this passage about what it means to be a true child of God. But first of all, let's read this. So chapter 2, verse 29, "If you know that he is righteous, you may be sure that everyone who practices righteousness has been born of him. See what kind of love the Father has given to us that we should be called children of God, and so we are. The reason why the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Beloved," or dear friends, "we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is. And everyone who thus hopes in him purifies himself as he is pure. Everyone who makes a practice of sinning also practices lawlessness. Sin is lawlessness. You know that he appeared to take away sins, and in him there is no sin. No one who abides in him keeps on sinning. No one who keeps on sinning has either seen him or known him. Little children, let no one deceive you. Whoever practices righteousness is righteous as he is righteous. Whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil, for the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the works of the devil. No one born of God makes a practice of sinning, for God's seed abides in him. And he cannot keep on sinning because he's been born of God. By this, it is evident who are the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is the one who does not love his brother. Okay, so three big ideas, and there may be more that I haven't seen, but some things that really struck me with this passage is that, first of all, he makes it very clear that if you're a true child of this father, what that means is you make a practice of copying the firstborn son who came into the world. And you see that right off the bat in the first verse that we read in chapter 2, 29. Everyone who practices righteousness has been born of him, just like that you know he is righteous. First part of that verse. Chapter 3, verse 7. Let nobody deceive you. Whoever practices righteousness is righteous as he is righteous. You know, when we read the Gospels, we read about Jesus walking up to people and inviting them to be a part of the thing that he was setting up. And nobody really understood in those moments what exactly that thing was. But he would invite people to become his students. This was really unusual for a rabbi at that time. Usually the students are banging on your door to follow you. But no, you remember in those moments what Jesus said as an invitation. He didn't say, I want you to follow this political organization that I'm starting up. I want you to follow this rule book that I'm going to write. No, he said, I want you to follow me. Me. A person. And, you know, in very key moments in Jesus' ministry, he would go back and remind his people of that initial invitation. That it was all about copying him and his actions. Not just memorizing his teachings and being able to like verbally spit out what he said on any given day. It's about imitating what he did in his life. Remember in John chapter 13, the night that Jesus was betrayed by Judas and then eventually went to the cross very soon afterwards. You remember how they were all at the table, the Lord's Supper table, and they were arguing with each other. We find out from another gospel about who is the greatest person. They had that argument a lot amongst themselves. And you remember what Jesus did? He didn't pull out Proverbs and say, hey, let's do a Devo on pride. Now, he could have done that, and it would have been great, because it's Jesus. Whatever he decides is the best thing to do. But what he did in that moment was, he didn't really say much. He got down from the table, he put on really humble servant's clothes, and he did something to them. He washed all of their feet. And then, when he got back to the table, he looked around the room and he said, do you guys understand what I just did to you? And they're all thinking, not really, because we have never seen a rabbi lower himself to that degree before. And then what he says right after that is so striking. He says, you call me teacher and Lord. And that's true, because I am that, he says. But if I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do just as I have done to you. Think about this question for a second. How do you learn from a teacher? And I'm not just talking about like a Bible teacher, but how do you learn from any teacher? There are a lot of ways to do that, right? You can, you know, sit in a lecture hall and listen to a teacher teach for however long he does. You can be in a class setting with a teacher, and you can ask questions, and you can have a dialogue, and you can have a discussion back and forth, and learn that way. Jesus, when he was 12 years old, did that in the temple with the teachers in the land that he was left with. You can also read a book that was written by a teacher. But you know what God has also created within us? A desire and an ability to be very hands-on in our learning process. Sometimes we learn the best, not just by listening to somebody talk or even having a conversation with them or reading a book. Sometimes we learn best by doing something right beside a master of that subject. You know, if you want to learn how to be a blacksmith, how are you going to do that? You can go to Amazon. I don't know if there are books on blacksmithing on Amazon, but there probably are because everything else is on Amazon. So you can probably buy yourself a book on that. You can probably read it from cover to cover. But that's going to be very different from actually banging on hot metal on an anvil right next to an actual blacksmith. And that's exactly what we see in the Gospels. And you know, when Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John sat down to write these books, what did they write about? Did they just write about, here's a sermon that Jesus preached? Now, there is some of that, and I'm very, very thankful that there is. We learn a lot about his teachings and what he said in all these given occasions, but that's not all we've got. We have so much of the content of the gospel accounts focused on what he did. You know, he went into this little girl's house and he rose, you know, he caused her to rise from the dead. And he went along the road over here in Jericho and he met this person and he did this to that guy. And all these occasions are given to us. Why? So that we could do exactly like we see him doing in his life. So that we can learn how to copy the actions of the firstborn son. You know, the Bible teaches... What did I do? Did I breathe on it wrong?
He touched it.
I touched it? I do. I have this bad effect on technology. I've got to work on that.
Keep going.
All right. 2 Corinthians 5 is a passage I want to bring into this. Because Paul, when he wrote to the Corinthians in that second letter, he said in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10, right after he talks about the kinds of people that you should and should not associate with and have as a leavening influence in your life. Sorry, I'm in 1 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10. Look what he says. We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive what is due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil. How are we going to be judged on that final day? It's not so much based upon what we know, but based upon what we have done with what we could have known in our lives. How have we used? How have we practiced in our lives? And something else, Matthew 25... Do you remember when Jesus is telling the parable about the division of the sheep and the goats on that final judgment day? How is God going to make a difference between the sheep and the goats? Well, it's going to happen based upon what they did. You know, Jesus is going to meet them and he's going to say, hey, you gave me something to drink when I was thirsty, and you gave me something to eat when I was hungry, and you put clothes on me when I was naked and I wasn't wearing anything, and you didn't do any of that. And that's how he's going to make the distinction between the two groups. So that's why this is so important. Understanding Jesus' doctrine and his teachings, that's really, really key. We got to learn what Jesus taught. but as a means to an end, so that we can understand how to act like him in our lives and train our bodies and our minds to be like him. Remember back in chapter 2 of 1 John, he's already talked about this. Chapter 2, verse 3, by this we know that we've come to know him. If we do what? If we keep his commandments. If we act like him. Not just understand intellectually what he's taught. But there are some people that John's writing about here that are really good at impersonating Jesus. I understand that we've got a lot of distractions this morning, but let's really try to focus on the text, because this is the reason why we're here. So I understand that he's talked about the Antichrist here, and those people, they just make an appearance of copying Jesus, but they're not really actually like him very much. And just like the devil, they can quote scripture and they can tell you why they believe spiritually about certain things. But look at what they do to discover who they actually are, he's saying here. And it's so true for us today. How do we know that we are born of God? How do we know that other people around us are born of God? We look at how they act. You know, how do they treat their wife? How do they talk about their wife when they're with them? And when they're not with them, or their husbands, what do they say about that person? How do they treat their children? Do they ignore them? Do they just yell at them on the rare occasions where they do pay them a little bit of attention? Or do they lovingly and patiently teach them actively about God and his things? Pay attention to whether that person is around when there's a Christian who really needs some help or some encouragement or some uplifting in some kind of a way. Pay attention to whether that person tries to work with the shepherds of a local congregation or against them. Based on what that person does, you can tell whether they are a true child of God or not. Okay, second thing that I want us to notice here is that a true child of God focuses on his current family status and also on the future body that he is going to be given by God on the final day. I want you to notice in chapter 3, in verses 1 through 3, he's talking about this love, the kind of love that the Father's given to us, that we should be called children. That's how he counts us. And then verse 2, even before we reach our home, we are considered children now. And that's why we're being treated as foreigners in the world, because God is a foreigner to people who do not appreciate the love that Jesus has for us. This is, just by way of application, this is incredibly encouraging as we live in an unjust world where some people might put unjust labels on you. They might treat you in a way that is not fitting as somebody who's created in the image of God. There are all kinds of things that can happen, but what do we do about that? Well, we can try to fight that, like on a national level, and as the election is ramping up on both sides of the spectrum here. You know, there are a lot of people in our culture who are saying, we got to put the right people in political places so that we can make different laws and try to fix things on a national or even, you know, community scale like that. But here's the thing. Even if you do that, and even if you pass the kinds of laws that you want to pass, there's still going to be people running around who have evil things in their hearts and evil things in their lives. And you can't legislate that with laws all the time. But how does God think? How does God treat his people? He gives them the label, the status of, you're my kids, you're my children, you're the people that I care about deeply. And then John talks about these new bodies that we're going to have. This is a really, really neat passage to me. Look at what he says. We're God's children now, verse 2, and what we will be. This is so tantalizing. This is like, you know, getting a chocolate, you know, catalog in the mail, and but like half the wording is blurred or hidden a little bit, but you know whatever it's talking about is really tasty and delicious. What we will be has not yet appeared. But we know, here's what we do know about it, that when he comes back here, we shall be like him because we shall see him as he is. And if we've got that confident expectation, next verse, then we're going to be open to allowing God to purify us just like he's pure in his life and the way he works. So what's going to be so special about these new bodies? Well, it's certainly true that we're not going to hurt anymore. We're not going to get cancer or any kind of diseases. We're not going to have any aches and pains. These new bodies are going to be perfect. But is that really what he's focusing on here? I think what he's really highlighting for us is that in the new bodies, we will have the character of our Father in a much better way than we have right now in our lives. Because all of us are incomplete, even though we have the status of children. Isn't that what always happens? Like when somebody has a baby, we all look at the baby and we want to immediately say, "Aw, you know, that looks like you. That resembles you." You know, the mom or the dad or both. Usually with my kids, it's Jenny. when we have the conversation with people. But that's the kind of family resemblance that John's talking about here, is we're going to look like God in his character, in the way that he works and thinks and speaks and acts. That's an amazing thought. Because right now, we're really trying, right? But we know that because John says earlier in the book, there's sin in our lives. You know, and if anybody says, "Hey, I'm not a sinner, I don't have any of that," then he's lying, and the truth isn't in him. But there will reach a point someday where we do become whole and complete and purified. And that gives us so much helpful perspective in our relationships with each other, doesn't it? You know how much is said in 1 John about loving your brother? How much we've talked about that already, how much we're going to talk about that as we work through the book. Love your brother. He says that constantly. Well, you know what's hard about trying to love your brother? It's because sometimes when we look at each other, we're just tempted to see all the holes. We're tempted to see the gaps in characters that should have been filled in long ago that had not been yet. And we look at this person and we go, here's this problem. They haven't fixed that problem. And I'm frustrated about that. And sometimes other people see those things in us too. What do we do about that? That frustration. It's helpful in those moments to remember what we will be has not yet appeared. We're all looking at each other and we are incomplete people. And so when you get frustrated at somebody else's character or your own character, remember that none of us have ever yet met a resurrected human. So we keep loving each other now in the hope that we will be whole someday. About ready to shoot this internet.
You and me both.
Alright, so third point. I don't know if I can advance yet. But the third point is coming from chapter 3. That the true child of God does not make a practice of challenging God's rulership. You see that, like chapter 3, look at verse 4. Everyone who makes a practice of sinning also practices lawlessness. Sin is lawlessness. And he talks about that down through 6. And then he kind of picks it up again in verse 8. Whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil, for the devil has been sinning from the beginning, down through 10. And like we mentioned earlier, John already has said that we have sin in our lives, chapter 1, and we got to be humble about that. But here, why does he say that no one who abides in him keeps on sinning? I mean, is this contradictory? What do we do with this? Well, notice how John keeps saying, he keeps using this word, practicing righteousness or practicing sin. You know, if you play sports, then you know a lot about practices, where before you go to a game and you actually kick the soccer ball around for real with this other team on the other side of the soccer field or basketball or whatever sport it is, you know that you got to show up to practices where you put your body through a certain number of movements, certain number of actions, so that you can learn how to automatically do things. So that when the real game comes, you'll be able to just do it and not even think about it, not have the pressure of that. And so it's kind of built into your brain. You have kind of carved this kind of rut in your mind. Rut's not really right word to use, but you've kind of carved this place where this is just the groove that you get into when the game comes. So this is kind of the idea of making a practice of sin or a practice of righteousness. There's a difference between accidentally stepping off the curb and choosing, okay, I don't really like that, I'm just going to stay in the gutter, and I'm just going to walk down the street that way. So the true child of God does not make a practice of challenging God's rulership. And notice how he's talking about lawlessness, he says. Sin is lawlessness. And I think to be lawless doesn't just mean breaking the law, you know, just once in a while. It means to despise the very idea of having somebody over you, of having this person or this thing to submit your life to. I don't want that. And so I'm going to go this way and live my own life. But verse 5 says, Jesus came to take away sins. He came to take away people's desire to rebel against him. He came to dominate and conquer the earth in the meekest way possible, so that he could set up a kind of kingdom that had himself as the king. And that's a direct threat to people who want to be their own kings and queens. Remember Psalm 2? In Psalm 2, God describes this kind of a person, actually, where the kings of the earth set themselves against the Lord and His anointed, and they say, let's burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. But he who sits in heaven laughs. The Lord holds them in derision. He will speak to them in his wrath and terrify them in his fury, saying, as for me, I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill. I'm going to make that guy king, regardless of what you all have to say about it, he says. We don't want to be like those kings, those rulers who exalt themselves against God's truly anointed king. But if we're not careful, we can become like these people that he's talking about here. And we may not ever say, well, I just want to reject Jesus in my life. But if we read something that Jesus did or said, and we say, ooh, I don't really want any part of that. You know, I need to be ready at the drop of a hat to give forgiveness. No matter how many times my brother comes to me during a day, and I need to not hold a record of wrongs against somebody else, I'm not really ready to do that, then what are we saying? We're practicing lawlessness, if that's our continual attitude, and we're becoming like these people who challenge God's rule. But I want to go back to this thought that we mentioned in the beginning. And this is found in verse 1 of chapter 3. See what kind of love the Father has given to us. Notice how he doesn't say, see how much love the Father has given, but see the kind of love that he has for us. What kind of love is this? This kind of love, verse 29 of chapter 2, causes God to invite us to be righteous like his Son. This kind of love, chapter 3, verse 1, causes God to call his children and say, I want to give you new bodies, where you're not going to struggle with the desire to sin anymore, and you're going to be like me in your characters. This kind of love causes God to teach us that obeying his rule instead of Satan's rule is so much better for our lives that he came to free us from that grasp. Jesus in the cross is the way that all of these things happen. He came to take away. Verse 5 mentions specifically what Jesus did, what his goal was. He came to take away sins, because in him there's no sin. In verse 8, he also came to destroy the works of the devil. The cross is where all these things happen. And so when we eat the Lord's Supper, we are remembering our commitment to this Lord who wants to give us all these blessings. Our commitment to copying him in what he did, not just learning what he said. Our commitment to remembering our status, that because of his sacrifice we now have as God's children, with him as our older brother leading the charge and making a way for us to become like him someday. Our commitment to forsaking the deeply rooted desires that I think we all experience to try to want to become our own kings. God frees us from all of that. And that's because he has this kind of self-sacrificial love and desire for us. So I hope that this helps you as we think about partaking of the Lord's Supper this morning.